So yesterday, we started to discuss this K-bar oscillation and how kaons are behaving. So let me write down a couple of equations that we already saw, because then later will be important. So we saw that we have these two states. One is the K0, that is a anti-strange and the down quark. K0 bar, the conjugate. We saw that these two guys are not eigenstates of CP, but CP eigenstates are given by K1 equal to 1 on square root of 2, K0 minus K0 bar, and K2 equal to 1 on square root of 2, K0 plus K0 bar. Where this is even and this is odd anti-CP. Okay, so this we saw. Then we started to write down the behavior of these two states, K0 and K0 bar. So I define this vector as K0 is a function of time, K0 bar is a function of time. And then the question is how this vector evolves with the time, okay? So we'll have that the derivative is equal to our Hamiltonian. So where we were left is to understand how we can write down this Hamiltonian here. Okay? So, what I wrote is an Hamiltonian in this form, where you have two pieces. Okay? This we saw already yesterday, so I'm going a bit fast because this was already everything written yesterday. And then what I said, okay, we can write down the Hamiltonian in this way, and we can say that these two pieces here are Hermitian. Okay? Now, the confusion and the questions that I got were because of the following fact. So if you suppose simply that these two pieces are Hermitian, since you have here an I, then the entire Hamiltonian won't be Hermitian anymore, okay? So what we did is to, as I said, impose that these two are Hermitian, and then we got to this general expression for the Hamiltonian that is in the following way. Also this we saw yesterday. But then the question on the back was, okay, this Hamiltonian is not Hermitian, how do we do, okay? I thought actually you saw already Hamiltonians of this type, but let me go a step back to see how we can write down a Hamiltonian like this, okay? So what we know in general is that from here, we get that this state is equal to the exponent of we are familiar with this, okay? But then we can plug in this expression here, okay? And this equation, this evolution in time becomes equal to this plus minus okay, so let's look at this expression. If you look at this piece here, since this m, as we said, is a emission, this is the usual time evolution that we are used to. Okay, but then we have this additional piece here that might be strange for us, but actually it's not that strange because what it's telling us is that we'll have some decay of this state, right? So this is in fact, I called gamma because actually this is what will give us the width of this kaon and antikaon state. Okay. So I think this should clarify the question of yesterday, I guess. Okay. Now actually, at the end of the day, we'll more focus on this piece here. To tell the truth, to understand how CP violation works and what we can learn about KK0 mixing starting from CP violation. But actually, the full story is not simply this piece here, but you will have a piece that is responsible of the decay of these states. Okay? Having said that, what we can do is to find the eigenstates and the eigenvalues of this system, right? So coming from here, we have that the eigenstates are given by what we call k long and k short. Actually, this long and short notation is coming from the fact that one of the two kaons will be more long-lived and one short-lived. That's why this notation is usually used. Okay. Let me write down the expression for these two states. So, of course, we'll have a combination of K0 and K0 bar.
These are eigenstates of H. Mm-hmm. These are eigenstates of H.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, eigenstates of the full Hamiltonian. Yeah. So, plus minus 1 minus epsilon bar, K0 bar. So this is a linear combination. Then let me normalize in such a way that the states are normalized to 1. So this is the right normalization, 1 plus epsilon square. But actually, let me define what this epsilon bar is. So this epsilon bar, let me write this expression, 1 minus epsilon bar. So basically what we see is that, first of all, these physical eigenstates are not the same thing as these K0 and K0 bar eigenstates. So these, if we remember, were Flebor eigenstates. Okay. So this is actually the first thing we can notice. But then also, what we can do is to express these physical eigenstates in terms of the eigenstates of CP, so these K1 and K2. Okay. And what we get is that, let me write K long is equal to K2 plus epsilon bar K1 and analogously for K short, we have this combination. So what can we conclude from here? So from here, we have learned that with this general Hamiltonian, our physical eigenstates are not CP eigenstates, right? Because we see that if we take K long, for example, K long will be a combination of both CP eigenstates. Now, actually, measurements, as we'll see in the following, tell us that this value here for epsilon bar is to be kind of small. So in first approximation, this will be CP eigenstates, but then we'll have a small corrections. Okay? So this is a pretty general way to see that in our chaos system, our physical eigenstates are not CP eigenstates. I've done this completely generally, so we'll see that actually our electroweak interactions are telling us that we are exactly in this case here, but this is the second part of this lecture. Okay? So this is a first interesting conclusion. Let me put it in a box. Then, of course, we can also compute the eigenvalues of the system, right? So, corresponding to K long and K short, we'll have what I call M long minus I So this will be the eigenvalues where all these terms here are real. Okay. Again, this first part here are the usual, you know, eigenvalues that we can find for the Hamiltonian. We can write down the expression, and we see that m long and m short are equal to m plus minus the real part. I will write down Q in a second. Okay, so let me explain these expressions. So what we see is that we'll have eigenvalues that are equal to the diagonal term of our Hamiltonian, right? Plus additional terms, so these are the real part of this quantity Q, this is the imaginary part, where Q can easily find that is given by M12 minus I gamma 12 times So this is a simple exercise of, you know, diagonalizing that matrix and finding eigenvectors and eigenvalues. So actually what we learn is that we started from two states, K0 and K0 bar, that were composed by the same quarks, one the conjugate of each other. But then what we learn is that the physical states will have a mass that is different from each other, as well as a width that is different right? Because we'll have that the difference in mass of these two physical states, so m long minus m short is equal to 2 times the real part of q, and the difference in width is equal to minus 4 times the imaginary part of q.
So you said m is the mass and gamma is the
width.
Width.
So again, to have the physical meaning in mind, that is the most important thing, we have two states, not CP eigen states, and with a different mass and different width. Okay? So all these things, so all these quantities that I wrote down are actually measurable. So maybe let me give you a couple of seconds more to write down these expressions. Sorry.
Is it right before the in q?
So this is a minus?
Minus 4.
Right, yeah. So this minus is coming simply from the fact that I'm computing the difference between the long-lived state and the short-lived state, okay? So what I said is that, indeed, all these quantities, so the masses and the widths, can be measured. And actually, it turns out that the value for this epsilon bar has to be quite small. We're speaking about something at the level of 10 to the minus 3. If so, what we can do is to simplify a little bit these expressions that are totally general, okay? And what we get is, so again, we can write down the difference in mass. Doing this approximation of epsilon quite small, we get that this is more or less equal to 2 times the real part of M12. So M12 was that off-diagonal term in the Hamiltonian. And similarly, so let me put here a k just to, as a reminder that we are speaking about the Kion system, okay? This delta m is exactly the one that I wrote in the other blackboard, of course. Then we can write down again the difference in width. And this will be more or less equal to 2 times the real part of M12. So you can do the algebra at home, but this is simply an approximation that is holding for epsilon bar quite small, and this is the first term of the expansion, basically.
Is it both the same?
Thanks for catching the typo. So this is gamma. Yeah, sorry. So what we also know, again, we can measure these two masses, right? We can measure these two widths. And what we know is that the difference in mass is something pretty tiny. We're speaking about 3.49. Okay, with some error, 10 to the minus 15 GeV, okay? And this should be actually compared to the, let's say, average of masses of the Kion system. So the neutral Kions, we know that mass of the Kions, let's say, an average of masses is something like 498 MeV. So let's say, sorry, keep the same units. It's, let's say, half a GeV. Okay? So we are speaking about an effect that is pretty tiny. But actually, we see that this effect is coming from electroweak interactions. Okay? We see later how it works. And corresponding, also, the difference in width is given by something like minus 7.4 10 to the minus 15 GeV. Okay? Actually, as we see in maybe 10 minutes, these two widths here are quite different. And we will learn that actually this the width for the long-lived system is much, much smaller than the width for the short-lived system. Okay, so this is a little bit just to have an idea of, measurements that we have and what type of numbers we are going to find. But then, so experimentally, actually, what we see is the decay of these kaons. We know that the kaons are decaying, so K0 and K0 bar are decaying to pions. Okay. What we also know is that pions have a specific CP property. Actually, we know that if you apply CP to a pion state, you get a minus sign. So they are CP odd. If you apply CP, they are odd if you apply CP. Okay. But then, in the decay, we expect to have CP conservation. So basically, if you take our K1 and K2 CP eigenstates, we can guess how they will decay, right? So we'll have K2. You see, so K2, we learned from this blackboard that is CP odd. Okay. So we expect that K2 will decay to an odd number of pions. So we'll expect a decay of this type, right? And instead for the other CP eigenstate, K1, that is even, we expect that it will decay to 2 pions. Do you agree? Do you have questions, maybe? Okay. But then, basically, we know that, we don't have to speak in this language, but we have to speak in the language of physical eigenstates, so this K long and K short. And we know actually the expression of K long and K short in terms of this CP eigenstates. They've written it there, right? So what we know from here is that we expect to have K long decaying to 3 pions, K short decaying to 2 pions. Most of the time, let's say. Because from here, where was it? From here, we saw that K long was approximately K2 plus some small perturbation, and similarly for the short-lived state. Okay? So typically, in a probabilistic way, we expect that we have a much larger probability for the k-long to the k2-3 pions and for the k-short to the k2-2 pions. But then, of course, there will be also some decay of this type. Right? Because of the small component into the other CP eigenstate. And so basically measuring also these additional decay modes is telling us that our physical eigenstates are not CP eigenstates. Okay? So this is to give you an idea of indeed how we can prove that the physical eigenstates are not eigenstates of CP. Okay? But then thinking about the main decay mode, since here we have a three-body decay versus a two-body decay, we can expect that indeed the width of this k-long is much smaller than the width of k-short, simply for kinematics. Okay? So this, the measurement of this sub-leading decay mode is giving us information about what we call indirect CP violation. Okay? We call it indirect because it's coming from the fact that actually these physical eigenstates are linear combination of two different CP eigenstates. So it's a matter of this mixing of the two states that I introduced to you. Okay? Very good. So actually these observables here, up to now we have focused on observables like the difference in mass and the difference in widths that are CP conserving observables. And as I said, can be measured. Corresponding to this, what type of observable one can write down? So the observable that people are usually studying is the so-called epsilon k. This observable is defined as the amplitude of k long going to two pions over the amplitude of k short going to two pions. From the discussion of before, we should have learned that we expect to have this quantity pretty small, right? Right? And actually what one can do is to compute this epsilon k in terms of the several elements of our Hamiltonian of before. Now what we learn is that this guy is proportional to the imaginary part of M12. So for completeness, I can give you also the value of this guy that is measured and is something like 10 to the minus 3. 2.2 10 to the minus 3. So this is this is everything we can learn for our KK bar system. As you see, I have just used basically quantum mechanics, a little bit of notion of what CP is, what type of decays these counts have. I have not spoken at all about really standard model interactions. Okay, so the second part of this lecture is understanding how all this framework can be read in terms of our standard model Lagrangian. We need to understand that our electroweak interactions, the interactions that Gordon introduced to you, are giving us all these observables that are non-zero, And most importantly, this observable here that is CP violating, that is non-zero. Okay?
How is K long experimentally distinguished from K short?
Simply measuring the width and this, that, seeing that you have two states, and mainly one state decaying to 3 pions, the other state decaying to 2 pions.
But we're interested in both of them decaying to 2 pions to measure this epsilon?
For the epsilon, yes, but then, yeah, this is a matter of, how you write down this observable, but then you have additional observable coming from the other decays. So let's see what type of diagram we can write down in the standard model that is giving a contribution to this KK bar mixing. Okay? So let me remind you that this K0, the initial flavor eigenstate was an anti-strange in the down core, K0 bar S in the anti-down core. Okay? So let's try to write down a diagram with these external legs, okay? So what we can do, so maybe I have a question for you, let's see. Can we write down a diagram like this? What do you think? I accept bets. If I ask you, probably not. That's a clever answer. Indeed, it is not, because actually we should have learned when Gordon introduced to you the interaction, the electroweak interactions, that these type of vertices here are not physical, are not allowed. So you don't have a vertex for the Z boson that is flavor changing, basically. Okay? So let me erase this because this is wrong. So don't take notes of this. What else can we do? So what is actually true is that we can write down a diagram like this. So let me put the right arrows. So here you have strange going out, down the strange. These are our W's. So let's see. So if you look at here, this is what this is our K0 state. Here in the final state, we have K0 bar, right? Here, this is a loop diagram with exchange of W bosons, okay? Since we have a W boson here, we have to go from down-type quark to up-type quarks. With this, I mean that we'll have not only one diagram, but all the several combinations. If I put here an up quark, here an up quark, or charm and top, or the combination of up-type quarks, you can write them down, right? So diagrams like this can give you a contribution to K0, K0 bar mixing, actually. And what is important, this is pretty general, is that whenever we want to have a flavor transition, because we see here that we have, so we are changing 2 times a strange quark to a down quark. So this is what we call a transition of 2 units of flavor. Okay. And as I was saying, this is pretty general that whenever we have a transition of flavor, so one type of flavor goes to another type of flavor, we need in the standard model to have a W boson, basically. Okay. So these are the diagrams that are giving a contribution in the standard model. So let's see a little bit of details of how to compute these diagrams and what type of dependence we have on the quantities that actually Gordon already introduced, like the CKM matrix. Okay. So for simplicity, let me focus for the moment on this diagram here. So we have two CHAM quarks in the loop. Of course, this can be generalized to all the other diagrams. Okay. But then we should be able to know the Feynman rules for all these vertexes here, right? So this we should have already seen in this course. So what we know is that here we'll have a dependence on V C D star. So this is the CKM matrix, and these are the CD element of the matrix, the conjugate. Analogously here, we'll have a dependence on VCS. Now, actually, I don't have to take a conjugate because you see that is a strange quark is going out, contrary to here, where the down quark is going in. So this is a kind of easy way to see if you need to put a conjugate or not. And then here we have a dependence on VCS. And here, again, VCD conjugate. Okay? So let's try to have an idea of how to write down the amplitude for this diagram. Maybe I can write it down there. Let's see. Okay. I think I can erase this blackboard, right? So let's write a few lines about the amplitude and at least let's understand what we expect from diagrams like that. Okay? So the amplitude of that diagram will be given by I over 2 g to the fourth power. So this is an electroweak coupling that is coming one for each of the vertexes there with the W, right? Then we'll have an integral on the momentum flowing in the loop. Then we'll have to put propagators of the W boson. Write them in this way. So of course we'll have two Lorentz indexes, and then we have to put the fermion states. So we have an anti-strange left, gamma mu. Oops. Let me write it in this simplified form. So this we'll see is a propagator, gamma rho, left, then we have our CKM elements. Square. So each of these is a W propagator. This is what I call the fermion propagator. So this will be the propagator of the charm quark there, right? These are the CKM elements that we saw already in the vertexes, okay? So then just to give you an idea of how the computation can start, you go into the details of that, and what you learn is that actually this is associated to VCD square times, equal it in this way. So let me see what I mean with this. So this, once that you compute all this amplitude, you're left with a loop function. This is a loop function that depends on what I call XC, where XC is the ratio between the masses of the charm quark and the mass of the W boson square. So actually, all the mass dependence enters in this combination. Okay. So basically, what is physically what is really important is basically just to learn that the amplitude can be expressed in this way. Okay. We see in the following why this loop function is quite important and what we can learn. But then you see that this is an expression just for that loop diagram where we had just charm quarks in the loop. Then you can imagine to take that loop diagram to put two top quarks, or one charm and one top, or one up quark and one top, all the combinations, right? So at the end of the day, what we'll have is so summing up over the several uptype quarks, you'll have an expression that goes like this. So let me call this for simplicity CD lambda C. Okay. So what you will have is lambda C square. So sorry. Times our loop function. And the same for two up quarks or two top quarks. So you will have a corresponding lambda t square loop function of two tops. And the same for two up quarks. Do you agree with me? It's simply summing over the several diagrams. Right? Do you maybe have some questions? I'm going too fast, or I'm trying to give you the physical meaning, and then you know the computations one can go through, of course. But then also you have diagrams where you have one internal fermion leg that is an up quark, the other one a top quark, right? So what you'll have are also terms like this, plus two times lambda c star lambda t star loop function of xc x top. So this is if you have a charm in the top, plus the last two combinations, so a charm and the up. And then finally, a up and the top. Okay? So this is all you have. Now we have seen that this loop function depends only on these masses of the quarks and of the W. But then let's do the following exercise. Let's ask the question, what happens to this amplitude if all the up-type quarks have the same mass? We know that this is not true, but let's see what happens if they had the same mass, okay? If so, of course, all these loop functions factorize out, okay? And what you get is a dependence. Okay, let me write everything from the beginning, but we have some loop function, right? Times all these CKM elements that you are summing over, right? So let me write down this parenthesis again. Let me write it down there. So what we get is a dependence of this type. So we have our loop function times so here I'm simply rewriting what we saw already. Okay. This can be written as lambda c plus lambda top plus lambda up all square. Okay? But then you remember what these lambdas were. So these are some combination of elements of the CKM matrix. So we can write them down explicitly. And what we see is that this is VCS, VCD, plus VTS, VTD, plus VUS, VUD, square. Okay. Now the question is, can you guess how much is this quantity here? So we have learned, I hope, that the CKM matrix is unitary, right? So not sure if you have seen, but this specific feature, but basically since it is unitary, we know that we can add the several elements of the CKM matrix to form a unitary triangle, right? And basically, because of unitarity, basically the all the several parts of the triangle are given by combinations of this type. So this is VCD, yes. Okay? So basically, this is to say that if we think about these terms as vectors, these vectors are adding up to zero. And this is simply some property coming from the fact that our CKM matrix is unitary. Okay? So basically, we learn that this is identically equal to zero. Okay? So this is what is typically called the GIM mechanism of electroweak interactions. So this is telling us that basically if the quarks had the same mass, so here you have to keep in mind that this works only under the assumption that the up mass is equal to the charm mass is equal to the top mass. If so, then our process of flavor, that is changing flavor, won't get any contribution. We have seen that for KK bar mixing, but it's a pretty general argument. And this is telling us that actually in the standard model of electroweak interactions, the transition of flavor are typically very much suppressed because of the unitarity of the CKM matrix. Okay? Now, this, I've used this to introduce to you the GIM mechanism. Of course, the final result won't be zero because the masses are different. So let's see a little bit what we obtain for KK bar mixing in the real world where the uptight quarks have a different mass. Okay? So let me, put this up. Okay, so now what we can do is to take back this general expression here and then keep our mass dependence. Okay? What we can also use is that relation there, so that lambda c plus lambda t plus lambda u is equal to zero. And so basically, I replace in that expression this, so you will have. That lambda u is equal to minus lambda c minus lambda t. Oops, this is again unitarity. We can plug in there. We can do a little bit of algebra, okay? And what we get is that our amplitude will be proportional to lambda c square. Let me write it and then I will explain. So what I have done, so this is a proportional. So what I've done to obtain this, this expression, I've done two things. One is every time I see a lambda u, to replace it in this way. Okay. The other thing is we know what this x is. It's this ratio. So what I've done in that expression is to say that my x up is equal to 0. Because we know that the up quark has a really tiny mass. So I'm putting it to zero. And then this this new loop function here, as zero of x, is defined as our loop function of before. Minus 2 times at 0 plus s of 0, 0. So at home, you can go through the algebra, but basically, what I've done is simply to replace the old loop function, what I was calling s tilde, with a new loop function s 0, because basically, every time we have loop functions, they enter in this specific combination. Okay. So this is a quite simplified form that is giving us all the contributions to this amplitude. Okay.
Could you repeat one more time what you said the gym mechanism is? You said it's if all the quarks have the same mass, then.
Right. So this is the most general expression we learn from loop diagrams like that.
Right. And then if you set the mass.
Right. Here you have loop function depending on the several masses.
Yeah.
Okay. Then from here to there, what I assumed is that x up is equal to x charm equal to x top. So all the masses are the same. So that all this loop function can factorize out. Mm-hmm. And then I'm left only with CKM elements. Mm-hmm. I use unitarity of the CKM matrix to show that this is identically equal to 0.
OK, so it's the statement that this amplitude is 0 for that.
Correct. But it's 0 only under this assumption that is that we know that is not right.
Yeah.
OK? But this is very nice to see that indeed we expect something that is quite suppressed, even you know in this general form because of the gym mechanism.
So the gym mechanism does it apply specifically to this process, or is it for many processes?
Actually, so every time you think about flavor transitions, so flavor transitions are those that are changing you know the flavor of some quark.
Right.
Every time you have something like this, actually. So this is pretty general. I've used this example to show it to you, but yeah, this is pretty general of all electroweak interactions. Yeah. But then, yeah, to do the you know the real computation, one has to keep different masses for the uptight quarks, and this is the result. Okay. I never wrote down this loop function, but okay, let me maybe do it. So we have that S0 of x is equal to this expression for x, 7x squared. And then we have the one that depends on two masses that is written in this way, x that multiplies logarithm this. So this is the entire expression for these loop functions. I'm giving them to you to tell you that actually this loop function is growing with the mass. So basically, what we know plugging in the you know the values for the top mass or the charm mass, what we know is that we get that S0 of xt, so the loop function associated to the top, is something like 1,600 times S0 of the charm, OK? So maybe you can guess that the most important contribution here is coming from the second piece. But actually, this is not true because we know, so we have also the CKM elements in front. And actually, we know that the absolute value of lambda c is something like 0.2. So you can plug in the, you know, the values for your CKM elements. And instead, lambda t, the absolute value is something like 3.4 10 to the minus 4. So this just to say that all the several contributions in that expression are kind of comparable. If you want to do, you know, the right computation, you have to consider all of them. Okay. So this is the first comment. The second comment is so I'm computing. If you remember, I'm computing this amplitude with the final aim of showing you the expression for this epsilon k, right? So this was our final aim. This amplitude is actually proportional to M12. So let's see if indeed the imaginary part of that amplitude is different from zero. Okay? That's fine. So we take it from here. So actually, I guess that you have seen the expression for the CKM matrix. And by now, you should know that the CKM matrix is of this form. We have something like 97. Sorry, I'm taking just a couple of minutes more than it's basically over. So. So for completeness, let me write down the entire CKM matrix, so the values, okay? And here we have 4, 10 to the minus 2, 8.6, 10 to the minus 3, e exponent of, so this is an approximated expression for our CKM matrix. And actually what we see is that this is what we call VTD. You should have already seen it, right? And VTD has this large face, okay? Other terms are instead, you know, kind of real, so the face is small. But here we have a large phase. And actually, this phase here is entering in this expression, right? Because we have this dependence, right, here and here. So from here, we learn that this amplitude, and therefore M12, is a complex number. So we have an imaginary part. And therefore, we have just learned that thanks to our Thanks to our electroweak interactions, this epsilon k is non-zero in the standard model. So this is a proof that in the standard model we have CP violation, and actually the knowledge of the existence of CP violation in the standard model was historically done in this way, imagining the k-bar system. Okay. Do you have questions?
Yeah. Just one thing. Can you explain a little bit more about that triangle that has to do with unitarity?
Sorry, yeah, I didn't hear you acoustically.
The triangle? Mm-hmm. How can you see unitarity from it?
So I think in some exercise or previously in the course, you have learned that the CKM matrix is a unitary matrix. That's right. So because of unitarity, one might think about drawing a unitary triangle, no? And each side of this unitary triangle is associated to this combination of CKM elements. So basically, what you can do, you can simply compute. So we have our expression for the CKM matrix. And we can see that we can combine the several elements in such a way to write down a unitary triangle. And then if the sides of this unitary triangle are added as vectors, then you get zero. So the only property, so of course you can do it very explicitly, taking these elements here, but actually is an intrinsic property that is coming from the fact that you have a matrix that is unitary. So simply using unitarity properties, you should be able to get to that condition there. OK?
So the Hamiltonian you wrote down at the beginning of the class, that's kind of an analogical Hamiltonian? Or is that, is the Hamiltonian you wrote down at the beginning of the class
right,
phenomenological? Or is there some way to actually get that from this guy?
Yeah, so what I wrote at the beginning is phenomenological, so it's pretty general, everything you can write down. But actually, so the second part of the lecture was to show you that starting from the standard model Lagrangian, we can get to this M12, that is proportional to this amplitude here. And therefore, we can start computing some of the observables like epsilon k, as I have introduced to you. With this, actually, we are finishing the part of kaons and of quarks. Starting from tomorrow, we speak about neutrinos, actually. So the last probably topic of this course. Okay?